All right. Stop vaping, you asshole. I know you mute your mic. I know you mute your mic, but we can hear it.
I do not care at all. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this is just now bothering you.
And by the way, that's the cold open. Stop vaping. Stop vaping, you asshole. Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey everybody! Welcome back to Faking Movies. This is episode 61, and we are surely in an adversarial kind of mood today.
We is.
I'm sorry, our soon to be introduced guest.
Yeah,
I'm sorry about that.
Well, I guess we'll jump ahead. I'll skip you guys. I'll come back around the back way. So our guest this week is our dear friend Austin. What's up, Austin?
Hey, what's going on?
Drunk. So
already
it is.
Oh,
so,
boy,
so
this is gonna be a rough
Austin's here recording with me, and we've been tossing a few.
Is
so.
Mezcal a type of tequila?
Tequila is a type of mezcal.
Seriously?
Oh God, here we go. Here
yeah,
we
it's
go.
The it's the method of preparing the agave. Yeah. Anyway.
Not all squares are rectangles, but all rectangles are squares. Except
and
the
that
rectangles
geometry lesson comes
mezcal.
To you from our dear friend Seth. What's up, Seth?
Every day I want to die a little more, so, it's good,
okay.
It's good. That's,
hey,
good. Oh, but I'm all right.
Yay, okay. That's also, we got Zach. What's up, Zach?
Mm-hmm. Oh, not much. How are you now?
Cool. I don't know what you said. So, as I mentioned, this episode 61 is yet another edition of our show in which we add to our stupid, dumb, overly educated hour.
Yeah,
I'm surrounded by doctors
right now, in
case you're wondering.
Not yet.
Kind of doctor.
Yeah.
Well, doctors and aspiring higher education folk as well. Austin's really getting at it, from what I heard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Adding those degrees up. He's just counting them up on the wall.
Doctor.
Yeah.
So also before we get started, I'm just going to mention, as always, check out our website, fakingmovies.com. Check out our Twitter at fakingmovies, which is still surpassing my follower count. I'm very proud of our Twitter queen, Marielle, for that.
We're
so,
doing it. We're doing it.
Good looks. Also friend of the show, Lucas, has been doing some upgrades to our website, so check that out as well. As I'm sure our listeners have guessed, our guest Austin is going to be faking a movie this week.
Mm-hmm.
Austin,
I am.
Do you want to take it away?
So I've never seen 16 Candles.
Mm-hmm. And what was the cast that we gave you?
So you guys told me that it had John and Joan Cusack in it.
My Joni.
Hell
wait,
yeah!
That was
had to make sure. I
that was number one and two bill that we gave you.
I doubt it. I think you put Ringwald first. So Molly Ringwald, right. Of course, and Geta Watanabe. I think that's all you gave me. Yeah,
that those is, are let's say the important
sorry,
parts.
Of course, yeah. Anthony Michael Hall, of course.
He
looks totally different as an adult than he did as a kid.
Yeah,
that's like, true. He was
extremely
in the dead zone as
an
adult.
Never guessed that he would turn into that man. No.
He famously did like a I was always a nerd makeover kind of thing. Like as an adult, he was like, I'm gonna be this guy now. Like it was a whole.
Did
thing.
He do it on like TV or something?
In the movies and in the dead
he
zone.
He lived it.
Yeah.
He plays like a real... Actually, we were just talking about Community before we started recording, and he has a pretty prominent cameo in a Community episode where he plays like a jock who tries to beat up nerds.
Yeah. During that Christmas episode. I forgot about that.
Quite the flip.
So I wrote you guys a plot.
Yeah, without further ado.
Okay.
Sure.
So I've got a couple of music selections in here.
That's actually very in keeping poignant, with the spirit of this movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Very poignant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after the opening credits, we open to Hall & Oates Maneater.
Here she comes.
It's playing. Oh boy, here she comes.
The opening shot Watch is a close up of Lily Colbert, played by Molly Ringwald. We see just her eyes heavily shadowed. Then we slow zoom out to Lily's face as she sits in front of her bedroom mirror. Now she's putting her makeup on. She has a horrible case of acne, prominent braces, shockingly red hair. But she's very determined. Tonight is going to go well. She can feel it. She puts on another layer of foundation. She's got a firm hand. She meets her eye in the mirror, adds some more eyeshadow. She's in her upper middle class family's suburban home. In the background, we glimpse bright walls, family photos, some stuffed animals left over from childhood. It's 7 o'clock in the evening, and she's getting dressed for her 15th birthday party.
Okay. I just want to break in here. Interesting that you chose the 15th birthday, considering the name of the movie.
Well,
but
is it we'll get there. I'm
assuming there might be a twist, or maybe this is a year-long odyssey.
That's right. We're going for the arc.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Start at 15.
Okay.
We're going to work 6.
I hope there's like a satanic ritual.
We may be heading.
Okay, we'll see.
Let's go. So now we get a bit of a montage. It's Lily getting dressed. She's wearing an elaborate pink dress. We got mixed in with
that hair. That's really gonna clash.
She's got her parents preparing the house. Well, you know, it's meant to clash. So like they're clearly expecting dozens of people at this party. There's decorations everywhere, banners, big happy 15th signs grace the front yard. The shot culminates in Lily walking down the stairs.
It's your classic quinceañera.
Yeah. So she's getting applause from her parents. She's brimming with excitement. And then nobody shows up.
Yep.
So at least nobody that Lily cares about.
That's happened to me at least twice.
Seth,
you've been to one of those.
I don't even remember that, but yeah, okay.
That sounds right. Yeah.
What I remember of this party was a lot of Seth, a lot of bats flying around outside, and a lot of nobody else coming.
Oh, boy. That sounds impossibly sad.
No,
the bats?
Yeah.
No, we didn't know about the bats. Zach
bats
didn't even
really
come,
cool.
That asshole.
Yeah, you bitch.
I don't know to
his,
which
his birthday excuse
you
was he was
but...
in San Francisco on a job. Like, yeah.
Well,
on, fuck you.
Yeah. My bad.
You bitch.
My blow.
Oh, but I remember bats, though. I like bats a lot.
I know you do. Most people don't.
No, most people are wrong. So
manifesting,
they're very useful in the in the environment.
Sure.
There's a lot of pest control.
That's true.
Mosquitoes, for example. Yep.
So nobody shows up to this party.
So nobody shows up. At least nobody that she cares about. Yeah. So Michael, her best friend, played by Anthony Michael Hall, he does show up. He gets there right on time, of course. He's carrying a small box, of course. Lily's grandparents get there, a few other clearly dweeby and misfit middle school friends. But the huge crowd that she expected to see, and especially the high schoolers that she was hoping to meet, are nowhere to be seen. Dance floor is deserted. She argues with Michael about why nobody responded to her invitations. So then cut to the cool kids. Turns out they did get the invitation. It's an elaborate flowery letter. A group of real childish looking. So 15 older high schoolers are sitting around in a basement. The letter is discarded on a table in the center of the smoky, darkened room. The place belongs to John's parents. John, the leader of the pack, played by John Cusack, wears his hair slicked back. He's got a tight-fitting white t-shirt and jeans, bomber jacket nearby.
Yep.
Perfect. Shit, I wear that like 3 times a week.
Yeah. So, at all times, he's either smoking or getting ready to smoke.
That's awesome.
I mean, as he should be.
He's super cool. I want to look up to that character.
Yeah, smoking is really cool. So.
That's awesome. The best.
Yeah, it's really tough.
It's also super cheap.
Really tough.
So, his girlfriend, Vanessa, played by Joan Cusack.
That's a little weird, but all right.
Wait. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
This isn't
That's
Back
fun.
To the Future. Like, what the fuck?
I don't want to dox anybody, but someone that you're very close to just did an incest movie for our show.
It's true.
Yeah.
But it's not like that. At least not for long. Sure. So anyway, his girlfriend is Vanessa. She's a cheerleader. She just come for practice. Around them are a crew of attractive, popular students at the high school.
Nice.
They're talking about how uncool freshmen are. They decide to teach the younger kids a lesson tonight. So then back at the party, things are getting worse than ever. And then the eggs start to hit the windows.
Oh, no.
Lily and her few friends run onto the porch only to see John's crew peel out in a few cars. The house is covered in toilet paper. Horrified and humiliated, Lily locks eyes with Vanessa as the cars drive away. Later that night, her parents worry about Lily. Upstairs, wiping the tears from her eyes, a furious Lily looks at herself in the mirror and vows never to be humiliated again. Her reflection begins to fade from the mirror as the scene cuts.
Oh, okay. Yes. I thought there was... Yeah, okay. But yeah. No, go.
Okay. So
the next day, there was some weird dark magic happening, but...
Something's going down. Yeah, so yeah, the next day, school starts. An optimistic Lily hasn't understood the significance of her humiliation from last night. The day is awful. She's made fun of at every turn.
Oh, she's just been marked forever.
It's one of those days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, reading a selection from Dracula in literature class, John and two other guys make fun of her. Her carefully chosen outfit falls flat. Her few friends are embarrassing. They're just total losers. The only bright spot is an interaction with Vanessa. In the restroom after school, angrily studying her teeth, two of which are mysteriously growing, Vanessa asks if she's all right. Lily, startled, replies sharply, but Vanessa tells her coolly, "I know what's happening to you. If you want to talk about it sometime, come find me."
Oh, boy.
So we're in a year-long trajectory here. The fall semester progresses. Things don't improve for Lily. The literature teacher, Mr. Wei, played by Geddes Watanabe, noticing Lily's fascination with Stoker's novel, tries to strike up a conversation, but she's uninterested. Settling into a deepening depression, Lily starts to wear darker clothing, stays up late at night. The stuffed animals are long gone from her room.
I'm embarrassed to admit that I only now am realizing the transformation you were going for.
What?
You really sowed those seeds pretty early.
Well, there were some clues early on.
Yeah, Jesus, like me. The like, mentioning of the novel Dracula more than once.
I mean,
but
that one was kind of heavy.
Yeah, bro. What the hell?
It's the 80s. Kids were idiots in the 80s.
All right.
So, speaking of which, vicious rumors begin to swirl around her. Some say that she's a slut, but most say she's too much of a loser to have been with anyone at all.
That's pretty rough.
Vanessa is seen watching Lily from time to time. She appears attracted, but Lily doesn't notice. Lily watches the popular kids at school more and more obsessively. John is promoted on the football team. Vanessa leads her squad to a conference
championship. Is that what we call it when people like do well in football? They get promoted?
Yep.
As you know, I am a football expert.
So okay.
All of us have played the hand egg in the past, right?
The king's game of hand egg.
Yes. I was on my secondary school's team.
I played second base when I was in football, I think.
Yeah, I was a I don't know. I blanked on other sports. I just kept thinking of real football positions.
Jokes are not going well.
Watch out for them wickets or whatever.
Oh, I hear they're very sticky. This is horrible. Go on.
All right, so at home one night,
Jesus Christ.
We watch Lily stare vacantly while chowing down on a raw steak.
Nice.
Her parents share a worried glance. Late that night, she reads Dracula under the covers. There you go, Lee. Has she finished this book yet?
Or is she just reading it over and over again?
She might be rereading it at this point. Okay. Like, she's into it.
Because otherwise, I'm really worried about her reading comprehension level.
Maybe she's reading a translation now. I don't know.
Out of English into another language?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Stoker was a native English speaker.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was already translating. Yeah. Anyway, one day, Vanessa follows Lily home from school. Vanessa asks if they can talk. Reluctantly, Lily agrees and they walk together. Vanessa asks Lily why she's so angry all the time. Lily explains that the more she tries to fit in, the less she's liked. "No one wants to hang out with me," she confesses. "I'm like a ghoul to them, and I'm feeling weird all the time. Mm-hmm. The more I think about being alone, the hungrier I get to be with someone." "I could show you a few things," Vanessa offers, and kisses her suddenly.
Ooh.
The two neck on a bench for a while. when Vanessa notices that Lily doesn't have any shadow. "I knew it," she says, coming up for air. "I knew we had that in common." So then we cut. Ah. After the winter break, Lily is inwardly a new girl, though she looks the same. She spends time with Vanessa in her room with the door closed, and her parents are pleased that she has made a friend. Vanessa and Lily celebrate
four dudes.
Burgeoning
that's
romance.
Right.
That's right.
Four dudes talking about teenage girls kissing each other.
I kind of thought about that while I was writing this. Yep.
Fine.
It's weird. Fine.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, so they celebrate their burgeoning romance together secretly. They got whispered conversations, stolen embraces in the high school stairwell. One afternoon, nearing summer, John, seeking his girlfriend...
Oh, right, he's in this.
...catches the two girls sucking on each other's necks in front of a display case. They don't have any reflections, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously. Oh, cool. Sure. Oh, confused and offended, he storms off and reports them to Mr. Wei, who calls the girls' parents. They are reprimanded separately by a series of stuck-ups and social conservatives, parents, principals, teachers.
Yeah, I mean, it's the 80s, right?
Obviously.
Yeah.
Probably there had to have been a priest in there somewhere.
I mean, when I almost got expelled, I was like... People intimidated me, a bunch of shitty vice principals in charge of discipline.
Whoa.
Tried to, oh no, like, hey, nerd, get out of here. I was like, oh, all right. So it's still a thing that it happens, at least 10, 15 years ago.
Were they wearing tight khaki pants?
Loose khaki pants.
Ooh, God,
no.
God, don't say
pleated
that.
Loose khaki pants.
Some of them even had cargo pockets.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The horror.
And definitely polos. Everyone was wearing polo shirts.
Yeah.
With our high school's logo just emblazoned upon it.
Yeah. As you do.
At my high school, the assistant football coach was a vice principal. It was kind of horrible.
That's usually standard, the trend, standard. I feel. Mm-hmm.
That's bullshit.
He was also my journalism teacher who gave us grades based on whether or not we were able to put out a newspaper twice a year.
Oh, well...
That's like a dream. That sounds like a great plan.
It was pretty great. It was pretty, pretty, pretty awesome. Yeah, I was pretty into that class.
Were you?
Not really, but I got good grades. So.
Yeah.
Didn't have to be, sounds like.
Exactly.
Yeah, it turns out.
There was no need. No need.
So, this romance. We got two girls. They have been shamed. It's the 80s, so it's not looking good for them. So they're forcibly separated. They're shamed at school. Miserable and having lost her status as cool kid, Vanessa becomes increasingly dreary looking. Lily, on the other hand, becomes suddenly attractive, though she is clearly miserable as well. She loses her braces. The dentist remarks on how large her incisors are. And her acne has cleared. Despite the rumors about her, she's a new, if secret, attraction to the boys. John takes notice, as do Michael and several others. Despite the stigma over her relationship with Vanessa, the boys begin to ask Lily out, one after another. John calls the house asking after her. Her parents, grateful for this turn towards heteronormativity, are pleased and encourage her to go out with the boys.
Dads are the worst.
Secretly, Lily begins calling Vanessa late at night. Lily smiles deviously into the phone, her eyes gleaming. So now we go on a montage of dates, and we've got Queen's Somebody to Love playing in the background.
Ooh.
Oh,
Can we afford this?
I certainly hope so.
Depends on the production company. We'll be fine. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
we don't have to put it on the DVD release. That's the big...
There you go.
Intoxicated with her, Michael and the other popular guys take Lily to the movies, on a hike, to the mall. In each case, when they try to kiss her, Lily stops them short. "Let me," she says, and bites into their neck. The boys react as if they are being kissed, and there's just the smallest trace of blood on Lily's lips as she pulls away. Last of all, John asks Lily out. Hendrix's voodoo child plays. He brags to Lily about how cool he's been at school and asks her if she's ever... done things with a guy before. She says she knows what he wants and bites into his neck extra hard. Blood all over the screen on this one.
It just like sprays all over the camera lens.
All over the camera.
It's like,
oh, that's good.
I want a freedom moment. Yep.
At
school, each of the guys who asks Lily out suddenly falls from social grace in turn. They become awkward, insecure, and ugly. John loses the championship game in terrific fashion. And then Vanessa and Lily are sharing smoky glances across the cafeteria. And then we cut to the summer. So on her 16th birthday, here we go, Lily's parents give her a Beater sports car. Her father makes an embarrassing remark about boyfriends, how many she's got. And then Lily, dressed more casually than before, a little bit lighter perhaps, she smiles, she takes the keys and picks up Vanessa. They ride into the sunset, end credits roll to Janis Joplin's Get It While You Can.
Okay.
All right, first thing first, the musical cues. This is not a thing I think anyone else has done. Fucking right on. So good.
I'm pretty sure at least four or five guests have done specific musical cues, right, including Caitlin for Back to the Future and Marielle for Moonstruck.
You mean last week?
Yeah.
Like I don't know if that's the most recent. It was a couple weeks ago for
Marielle
us.
Marielle should have been
in this timeline. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember, but like they fit very well. They were
in this timeline.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I've got two timelines in my head. I've got the timelines of the episodes that I've recorded and the timelines of the episodes that have come out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Second, you got a lot of like not so much the main plot, but a lot of weirdly small details correct. Like,
yeah.
I guess more on that later.
No, like
sports cars.
I mean,
one
we can talk about some of the like the close stuff, like sports cars. Upper middle class, 80s suburbia is another. Just as a general thing.
Everyone being hyper focused.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, Breakfast Club and whatnot. Everyone being hyper focused on who's fucked or who hasn't fucked yet. That's a big fucking part of this movie.
Yeah, I mean
it's a teen movie.
Those Brat Pack movies and like Molly Ringwald kind of like fell off the face of the earth for a little while after the Brat Pack and then reappeared only in French films. So
wait, really? I didn't know that about her.
That seems like a thing she'd do.
I can recall, yes. Now, I have no way to substantiate this, but that is what I remember, is that she just kind of disappeared for 10-15 years and then suddenly was reappearing in French indie films.
Weird. Oh, yeah, but she's not personally French, I don't think.
No, she's from Illinois, like, all this bullshit. Yeah.
But I think that she was a Francophile.
But
again,
white upper middle class,
I have no way to substantiate any of this. This is just what I seem to recall from... I have no reason why I would seem to recall it. Anyway.
Okay.
Well, anyway, also, I'll point out that the musical cues, just as a general thing, like, are very good in this movie. There's a lot of really outstanding songs that happen in it. I don't know that they're, I don't know that they make a lot of sense necessarily for the scenes that they're in the way that you put thought into it.
right.
But this movie has a great soundtrack.
They are the one redeeming factor of this garbage pile of a movie.
Which we will get into. Seth, do you want to give both the IMDb one sentence summary and your alternate title?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So this movie was 1984. And here is the IMDb summary for Sucksteen Cantles.
Yep, Seth came up with that one the other day, and we were all very proud. I think maybe written out it works a little better.
Because there's the apostrophe and things, but this is definitely a Sucksteen Cantles.
Oh, yeah, this movie is real turd.
So here's the summary. A girl's, quote, sweet, end quote, 16th birthday becomes anything but special as she suffers from every embarrassment possible.
Yep. So is this about, like, a big 16th, like, is it all about the party? Like, where the party's a huge deal?
I can give the quick summary, and that'll shed some light if you want.
The quick suckstory.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's the best joke we've ever made, Seth.
Shut up, baby. I know it.
Movie opens. Molly Ringwald is the main character. She's on the phone. This is a recurring thing. She's either on the phone or speaking aloud to herself through a lot of the movie, and I think they just didn't have enough money to do voiceovers or something, because, yeah, there's a lot of inner monologue gets played out.
Like, it's, like, one of my first notes is, what the fuck is this one-way phone call exposition shit?
Yeah, there's a lot of that in the movie.
I don't think that was a cost thing. I think that's John Hughes jerking himself off. Like,
this was directed by John Hughes. We'll get into
the John Hughes bullshit after the summary. Yeah. But John Hughes directed and wrote this movie. So, it's Molly Ringwald's 16th birthday. It's also the day before her sister's wedding, and everybody forgets that's her birthday in her family. They all forget. She leaves hints, they all forget. She goes to school, and her crush, she's a sophomore, her crush is a senior, finds like a sex survey that she writes where she's like, if I ever wanted to have sex, I'd have sex with Jake Ryan, and that's the crush's name.
How impossibly contrived is this already? Yeah. He finds a sex survey. What the fuck even is that?
They were
passing notes and
all the questions were about sex, and one of the questions was, who would you have sex with?
Yeah, and then Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan like picks it up off.
I think this is where you're confused, Seth. It's Jake Ryan.
I like your version better.
Let's go with
there
Jack
weren't
Ryan.
As
that's
many situations where you have to like save the president or kill terrorists or whatever, and that's what I was expecting.
Or become the president after terrorists kill them.
Jack Ryan becomes
the president in the novels.
Oh boy, Tom Clancy.
Sure.
And then during the State of the Union, he like bombs some like independent government because they harbor terrorists. Like,
I thought he was like, I thought that's how he became president, because the State of the Union, like, because he was the guy who was like,
I think it's both. I think the first thing he does as president is call like a big joint meeting, and then we're not afraid. So,
okay. Well, I
get off my plane. That's my Harrison Ford.
I didn't mean to get us into this deep Ryan hole.
Hey, Tom Clancy's a piece of shit, and so is Jack Ryan. Jingoist motherfucking imperialist assholes.
I mean, I like Hunt for Red October mostly because it gave me a paper in undergrad where I wrote about the worst Russian accents in all of cinema.
I want to visit Montana.
Scottish Russian, yeah.
You got a roux in Russian? Or no. It was no. You speak Paruski?
I'm Sean Connery, and I play many different nationalities, but I sound like a Scotsman every time.
My name is Ramius from Georgia. All right, well, it was total garbage. Anyway, sorry, I derailed you.
Yeah, so after it's that her Ryan birthday. Hole. It's her birthday, everyone forgets. This kid finds out that she wants, like, this is her crush, basically. Mm. And he's like, ooh, I'm interested because I'm bored with my current girlfriend.
Is this Cusack?
No. This is a person we didn't give you because he's not relevant.
Yeah, he's really not important.
Like, yeah, the actor. Not famous at all. Okay.
Yeah.
So she goes home on the bus at the end of the day, and we meet Anthony Michael Hall, who, like, relentlessly hits on her in a real fucking gross way. Just to establish that he's into her. Mm-hmm. He's a freshman. So she gets home. People still forget her birthday. All her grandparents have come now and are staying in the house because her sister's wedding's the next day. Mm-hmm. One of her sets of grandparents brings a foreign exchange student, Getty Watanabe. And his character's name is Long Duck Dong.
Yep.
And every time someone says his name on camera, a gong sound effect happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like,
not even that. I think even when he shows up, like, he opens the door and the dong happens. Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is our foreign exchange student, Long Bong. Like,
yeah.
God,
it's
fucking damn it.
Like, the thing is that Watanabe does not, like,
he does not play it as a stereotype.
Yeah, for the most part. It's not what? Like a, well...
Would we say that?
There's a couple lines that are inescapably, like...
Yeah.
Comical, but, make fun of Asian people. But other than those couple lines, he plays the role like a human being.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah. He's not pulling a Ricky or a Mickey Rooney from Breakfast at Tiffany's sort of situation, right?
He's also actually an Asian person. I think that has something to do with it.
That's our first step, right?
I did read a clip where Watanabe said, like, "Oh yeah, I mean, like, that's I've never spoken anything like that. That is, yeah. I got that accent from a Korean friend of mine." So, first of all, he's playing a Chinese character, and the voice he's doing is Korean, and it doesn't matter because a white racist wrote the role for
him. It's the 80s, He has defended it.
How old is the actor at this point? Like, he's like 20, 30?
Yeah, probably. He's mid-20s at least.
I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
He's older than all the teenagers, for sure. Yeah. So there's online, he defends this role, and I think maybe correctly. He was saying, like, it was a different time, and I was trying to be funny, and as an Asian person, I don't think that it's offensive. I was just trying to goofs on it, so.
I'm sure that this was, like, the only high-profile role out there at the time for an Asian actor.
For sure.
I cannot fault him for taking this role. What I can fault is John Hughes for being a fucking racist asshole.
Yeah, that part is rough.
So, Watanabe was born in 1955, I think.
Whoa! All right.
So he's 29 when this movie.
He's like
was
in
made.
His 30s.
Unlike everybody else in this movie.
Well, so that's another thing. I mean, we could just talk about this now. Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall were both 15, going on 16 when this movie was filmed,
which is rare. Yeah.
The other two leads, so to speak, so the boy that she has a crush on and his girlfriend were both in their mid-20s.
Mm. Yeah. Which is much more how it happens nowadays. Like, you never get 15 playing 15 anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the male love interest, whose name is Mike Schofield.
In real life.
He only has 10 acting credits at all.
He looks a lot like a young Josh Hartnett, I want to say. Kind of. Yeah.
We can see that.
Yeah.
Well, the casting director, I was reading one of the things I found out about the movie, said when he came in to do his read, he was super nervous and, like, really bombed it. But the casting director was a woman in her 30s, and she's like, "Oh, but he was just so dreamy. We had to have him." Like, this is the weirdest fucking movie ever made.
Ew.
Yeah, he does have a very strong chin, so, you know.
The other person who was up for this role, who, like, the main person in contention, was Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, God. I can't even
Viggo Morgenstein.
So I read a quote from Molly Ringwald, and she was like, "I really wanted it to be Viggo. He made me weak in my knees."
Yeah.
baby. Aragorn's son of Arathorn.
I can't picture
you
a young
to go through
Viggo.
The whole list?
Go for it.
I can't do it off the top of my head.
All right,
the entire lineage all the way to Isildur.
It's like goddamn 30 people, including. I mean, he was Aragorn the Second.
That's true. Yeah.
So, like, we need to go back. You know what? 10, 11 generations to get to Aragorn the First. But you know,
it's all the Rangers of the North. Like, that was a weird branching off, and then the Stewards, of course, took care of Gondor during
It's not really important, but
it's not for this show.
wait until we do just a Silmarillion cast, and then. Then we got there.
I did Sharky's Machine already, where we did the scouring of the Shire, but
I remember nobody enjoyed it but me.
Yeah, you were a big fan.
That's true.
Okay, so back to the movie.
Anyway, back to this stupid fucking goddamn
so
bullshit.
So, Ringwald is like, "Okay, I'm going to go to this school dance tonight," and her grandparents are like, "Oh, you should take Dong with you." Sound effect. Yeah, anyway, so she goes to the dance and she meets up with her friends. Long Duck Dong, bong, sound effect, meets a girl and, like, they're super into each other right off the bat.
Yeah.
White chick?
Yeah.
Well, this
like
is
a track and field athlete.
This is probably a good time to mention that no group is safe in this movie. She's like an athletic, maybe sort of large woman, and they just harp on that endlessly.
Large, like, in the sense that she's bigger than Molly Ringwald. I mean,
she's tall. She's like maybe is a shot putter. Who knows? Yeah, but, like, right. they, like, every single stereotype exists in this movie, and they do nothing but highlight it all the fucking time.
It's endless. This is... Hey, Austin, here's a secret. This is a garbage movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
secret number two.
It's a series of goddamn one-note characters doing half-note scores. Like,
I'm going to see this one.
Yeah, you won this one before you even started. Like, it was... Yeah. Yeah. It was rough.
So they're at this dance, and Anthony Michael Hall is being a real sex pest to Molly Ringwald.
Yeah.
But she, like... has a moment with them where they, like, are off by themselves, and it's like, hey, why are you such a pest? And he's like, hey, because I'm insecure. And she's like, so am I. And it's like, hey, we're not so different. You, they have a, we're not so different. You and
we're
I.
We're not
moment.
So different. You
and yeah,
I.
Yeah. And then
yeah,
you
it's
find
a
out
super
is,
super villain sort of speech occurs.
Yeah,
you're a sexual pest, and I'm not. But you know,
yeah. And
like,
then
oh god, I'm
that,
so tired of this. We're not so different. Speech. God damn.
She finds out that Anthony Michael Hall's character kind of knows her crush, and he's like, oh, your crush is talking about you. He's into you. And then, like, the next set of the things goes on where we go on this adventure where Anthony Michael Hall and his cronies, one of them is John Cusack. He's one of the nerd characters also. Mm. Joan Cusack, really? By the way, is a background nerd who just keeps showing up, and she's in a neck brace, and she doesn't have any lines. But
never has a line.
Poor
but she's
Joanie.
In so much
poor
of the movie.
Joanie.
She's
oh,
in
she's
so many
good.
Scenes, but no
Joan
lines.
Joan Cusack is
so
a
weird.
Fucking treasure. But
she is a saint. She's a saint.
Should she be added to the national treasure?
I'm oh, she
totally,
is an
totally
international
fine.
Treasure, for Christ's sake. Yeah.
Well, I guess
all
I need
seven
to
continents.
Update that goddamn, like,
poster.
Weird
yeah.
graphic
yeah.
that I've
yeah.
forgotten yep. About for, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months.
Oh, easily. So we get to this party... where it's like
to the after party,
at mm-hmm. at the popular crush's house, Jake's house, and his girlfriend threw it, and it's a fucking wreck. The
it's
house
a
is
mess.
Destroyed. The nerds show up. Anthony Michael Hall ends up ingratiating himself on the popular guy after everyone else leaves. They kind of have a bro moment, and this is when the real like sexual assaulty stuff happens. Because
Yeah, but before we get to that really upsetting part, let's talk about my favorite part of the movie, which is where in the aftermath, of the party, there's like pizza everywhere.
Yeah. There's a pizza on a turntable.
There's a pizza on a turntable as Anthony Michael Hall and Jack Ryan are talking. There's like a pizza falling out of a cabinet, and like honestly. The house is more pizza than house anymore.
Mm-hmm. They ordered 600 pizzas and they ate about 6 of them.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And so, like, as I was watching this and, like, sending messages to Lee and Zach, as I tend
to
do.
Me and Seth watched this movie 5 minutes apart, so there's a lot of weird conversations going on.
Yeah,
it's
true.
You finished it and you watched it 5 minutes after?
No, as in I started it 5 minutes before you did.
Yeah. the net result is that we came up with a much better screenplay, which was about a house that becomes more pizza than house.
And then
wait, House of Leaves pizza? This sounds very fun.
No. Man. So and then it becomes a pizzeria, and it's a prequel to
so
Mystic Pizza.
Yeah, yes! So it's like he's like Jack Ryan is calling his dad and is like. Oh no, the house is more pizza than house at this point. And
calling
the dad
the
is like, well, I guess we should open a pizzeria. And then, like, that's kind of how the origin story starts. But
you can
I
go
also,
anywhere with that.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
That's just the first third of the movie.
Yeah. And you could have some Mystic Pizza troubles. You could like throw in some fried green tomatoes for no reason. Like all sorts of stuff. Like, it'll be all kinds of fucked up.
You could have all kinds of crazy toppings too. No one's to tell us.
Oh
now.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I want anchovies and pineapple, and you're like, that is disgusting.
Put it on a pizza.
Well,
marshmallows and bacon. What?
Lee, we're not the goddamn Ninja Turtles. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, I knew I ripped that off from somewhere. Thank you.
No, that I believe in the cartoon it was like, we have 3 whipped cream pizzas and 1 jelly bean.
yeah, that sounds right.
In
episode... Do they deliver them through the manhole? Like,
I don't know how else they would.
No, they actually drop them through. They went to a pizza. This was in, I believe, the second episode of the cartoon, where they went to a pizzeria that was run by the Foot Clan, and then there it was a restaurant called Ninja Pizza, and they were like, 3 ripped creams and a jelly bean, and then he like throws them, and he's like, nice, a slice. Oh man, it was a. It was really important
so
to me.
How involved was Krang in this this plot? I need to know. Yeah.
At this point in the cartoon, probably not.
So the Technodrome had not surfaced in NYC?
No, well, the Technodrome was burrowing around, but I feel like it hadn't become known that it was a Dimension X like entity.
Sure.
Shredder was still the main antagonist, and they didn't
know
that he...
You mean Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince.
Indeed. and he wasn't yet a lackey of that weird brain in a stomach.
Weird brain in a big naked guy's stomach.
Doesn't that in-person conversation go, wait, why are you 4 anthropomorphic turtles? And he goes, why are you a brain in a fucking stomach of a dude? And they forget about the pizza and nothing else happens? Like, that's how that goes, I think. Yeah,
I feel like we could have solved that series really fast.
Yeah,
but...
done. End.
I don't know. I love that cartoon. That was very important to my childhood. Anyway,
Turtles in a Half Shell. You are a total Donatello.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, I am the Donatello of this.
Zach
crew.
Is Michelangelo. 100%.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Well,
you're a party dude. You are a party dude.
I mean, given your hair, Lee, I feel that you're cool but rude. So
that's really sweet of you to not saddle me with Leonardo, even though I love swords.
I was gonna say, given your hair, I feel like you're Casey Jones, but I don't know.
Oh, I would be Casey Jones. Hell yeah, motherfucker. Wait, I'll be Elias Codius any day.
Man, Elias Codius, I forgot about that fucker.
From
we
Crash.
Still have to find like 3 more characters. Anyway, we have gotten off topic.
Super off topic.
Anthony Michael Hall is in a pizza shaped house at this point.
God, we're only halfway
home,
through.
Yeah,
yeah,
oh, God, with yeah. Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan.
Yeah,
and they're about to do some very upsetting things.
And a sort of beater sports car, a Porsche 944.
Yeah.
Well, what's gonna happen? Okay, so they're in this house, and Jack Ryan is talking about how, I'm bored with my hot girlfriend who, and this is an actual line from the movie. I've got it right, but I might be paraphrasing.
I saved it though. It's somewhere in here, but go ahead.
He goes, so take Caroline up there, and Caroline is like the super popular perfect girl that everybody worships. She's passed out in my room. I could violate her 10 ways right now, but I don't want to because I'm bored.
I don't want to because it's wrong, because I'm bored.
The exact quote is, I could get any piece of ass I want. Shit, I got Caroline in my room passed out right now. I could violate her 10 ways if I wanted to. Shit, what are you waiting for? Was Anthony Michael Hall's response.
Yeah.
Everybody's a monster.
And all this scene is playing while Anthony Michael Hall is mixing martinis and
dirty martinis.
Frank Sinatra's playing in the background.
And he's wearing an apron. It's the weirdest fucking scene ever.
As he did in Breakfast Club in this movie.
Even younger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Yeah.
He's the McLovin of his generation.
That's a really good comparison. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this plot line resolves with Jack Ryan gives Anthony Michael Hall his dad's Rolls Royce and his girlfriend. He just is like, here, take her. Go. Yep. I'll tell her
where she's passed out upstairs.
I'll tell her that you're me.
He carries her to the car for him.
Take her home is what he told her to, or told
also,
Anthony Michael Hall.
A person who fully admits, I don't have a driver's license, and he goes, well, then you can't drive the manual car, but I'll give you the Rolls Royce, because you can just figure it out. It's fine.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that storyline wraps up with them driving around town. She gives him Roadhead, and he breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah, that was weird and gross.
Ow. Sure enough.
Uh-huh. And then they wake up in the morning, parked in front of a church, and she's like, I'm pretty sure we had sex last night, and I was into it. And then their boyfriend and girlfriend?
Yeah.
This is another we're not so different conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, she's it really like, was.
She's like, oh, I have insecurities. And he's like, yeah, me too. And then they make out a bunch, and it's fucking weird. Yep. Yeah.
I will say there is one part of this sequence that I enjoy. It's that they both passed out in a convertible with the top down overnight in the fall in Illinois.
So it's like 45 degrees.
Yeah, and apparently they had sex in the car with very shadowy levels of consent. But he also had...
Indeed.
He was traveling with his night retainer and put it on because he wakes up with his night retainer.
Headgear. Full behind-the-neck headgear. Yeah.
I wore that when I was a kid. I had that.
Solid.
Sure. I bet you crushed puss when you were doing it.
Oh, boy. That is an upsetting phrase.
I did have sleepy time headgear for a good portion of my young adolescence.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The other side of this story is Molly Ringwald. Actually, Molly Ringwald gives her underwear to Anthony Michael Hall so he can win a bet.
Yeah.
When does that happen?
At the dance. He bets John Cusack and their other nerd friend. He's like, I'm going to go fuck that girl. And they're like, this is John Cusack goes, I bet you a dozen floppy disks that you don't even get any tit.
That's a quote?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's a direct quote, yeah. Yep.
And so she's like, they want proof and they want underwear. So he's like, can I have your underwear to like win my bet? And she gives it to him.
Yeah. This is after that they kind of have this weird heart to heart where they're both like, Anthony Michael Hall, like, oh, I have a lot of weird insecurity. Well, not weird, but like very natural insecurities at this point. Yeah. And Molly Ringwald is like, yeah, I'm really insecure too. Like,
here's my underwear. Yep.
Well,
and this comes
like,
up later.
Take my underwear, please.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This comes up later too, where like all of Anthony Michael Hall then shows off her underwear in obvious fashion.
Yeah, they charge admission to all the like tiny boys at school.
And then Molly Ringwald is somehow like magically surprised that this is what happened. She's like horrified, like, oh my god, my underwear. Like, you gave it to a fucking a stranger. What like what's the best possible outcome?
Pest.
Like that doesn't make any sense.
Sex pest.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
So then, like, what happens is, actually, there's a scene with her dad. Seth, I think you had a good take on this scene.
Hashtag
dads are the worst.
But
they're not, sadly.
That's the problem, is that...
one of the founding...
He's not looking for underwear.
No. One of the founding tenets of this show
she's
is
like,
that dads
because,
are the worst.
Because Molly Ringwald's like extended family is taking over every room, she's like sleeping on a couch or whatever, and the dad comes down and he's like, oh, I can't sleep or whatever, and they have a really like good in-depth heart-to-heart about like... Well, oddly, so like relationships and like what you expect, and like, I'm sorry I missed your 16th birthday, there's so much going on in my life and all sorts of things. And so like what this podcast has posited in the past is that dads are the worst. But what this movie suggests is ... maybe they aren't.
Yeah. I have written down this fucking garbage dump of a movie, like, somehow actually made me feel okay about it for like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah,
it's like a really positive relationship between a father and a daughter where they have like an open and frank conversation about sex and like depression.
Yeah.
And also, like, if there's a guy you like, you should maybe go for that and not be like, you know, ashamed about it or whatever. And if he's a good dude, go for it. And then I wrote, this does not fit my worldview of dads, obviously. Like, I don't understand how this works.
And from like a really ahead of its time kind of moment, he says, like, by the way, make sure you let him know that you're the one who has all the control in this relationship.
That he knows that you wear the pants, I believe, is the line.
This is like the last thing that happens in the night. Like, there's all the party scenes and that.
Yeah, this is like three in the goddamn morning.
This is a separate kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. it's like mid-movie, yeah. So the whole time I kept thinking, this is going to be a dream sequence, because this does not fit the overall, like, tone of the movie. Like, this has to not be real, because it's so genuine.
In the morning, she also has, like, a nice conversation with her mom, who also is, like, very upset that she forgot her birthday and very apologetic. Yep. So she has like a really good family relationship. They go to her sister's wedding. Her sister,
with the exception of her little brother,
is a real goddamn piece of
shit.
Yeah, he's a real 80s brother. It happens.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
they go to the sister's wedding. The sister takes a shitload of muscle relaxers because she's on her period. Yep. And she basically slinkies down the aisle because she can't stand up, you know.
Literally,
yes. Like that verb. That's a good verb.
Yeah. She's marrying into a mafia family, it turns out.
What gives it away?
The incredibly Italian family members and the score from The Godfather playing in the background whenever they're on screen.
And the sister is what, like 23, and I think that dude was like 38, maybe? He's like balding.
Oh, he was at least 75 years old. Like, he was the oldest fucking Guido I could ever imagine.
He had some teenage children somewhere, I presume. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually the same actor that played the janitor in The Breakfast Club.
What?
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. It is. That makes sense to me.
Oh, wait. No,
and gross.
I wonder what the casting director said when she saw him.
Just like, weird and gross.
Cast him.
Yuck.
Yeah. So the wedding happens. Jake shows up outside the wedding, picks up Molly Ringwald's like, hey, I got your underwear. Here it is. Happy birthday. And then they like sit around a birthday cake and they kiss.
Yeah.
Well, but there's another dad moment where the dad's getting in the limo and she's like, he's like, do you have to go to the reception? And she goes, no, I don't. And then the dad like winks at her like, I get it. And then they drive away in the fucking.
Yeah, because she like points at him. She's like, this is the guy. And he's good job. Like,
Yeah. It's cute.
Yeah. And
that's it.
Yeah, that's the whole fucking movie. Yeah,
I think it took us longer to explain it than the movie actually took to watch.
It was almost.
We left out what happens to Dong. He apparently crashes the grandfather's car into a lake and gets really hungover. That's it.
Yep.
Great.
Lee and I had a long conversation about dresses.
They were pretty decent bridesmaid dresses in this movie.
Yeah, so like Molly Ringwald's bridesmaid
Well, there was way too much tulle.
Yeah,
it was 80s. It was a lot of shoulder pads.
Too much ruching for my taste. But,
wasn't like a stereotypical horrible bridesmaid's dress.
Yeah, the shoulder caps are a little too much, and the color was all right for her complexion, but like
it could have been better.
But the ruching was a problem, and so Lee and I had a long conversation about this. Apparently, as I can recall.
We were a couple of real phantom threads up in here.
And we were talking about how we should probably like start a dress business, but that's a tale for another time.
On the front, and then a dress business in the back.
Oh, and if it's like if the dress is too tight, you get some grease.
Or if the dress is too loose, then you feed him the pizza.
There you go. Oh, it's perfect. Okay. There's no waste. This is the first ever no-waste pizza and dress business.
Cyclical. I don't want to make dresses that have no waste. That seems like...
Classic Seth pun. That's what happens.
This is a garbage movie.
Yeah.
This movie's so bad.
So
she...
This is some goddamn terrible.
Passes this guy the letter.
No. She tries to pass it to a friend. Okay.
He gets it on accident.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He knows she's into him. He runs into Michael Hall at the party after the party.
At the prom thing and then at the party.
And then the day after, like, they get together?
No. Yep.
Yeah. After he breaks up with his girlfriend,
with Michael Hall.
Yeah.
When she's
after
wiped out.
He literally bequeaths her to
his girlfriend.
Yeah. Jack Ryan's girlfriend hooks up with Anthony Michael Hall.
Right.
And then Molly Ringwald and Jack Ryan hook up.
Yeah. And I think Anthony Michael Hall, like, doesn't really have a win. Like, they just agree, like, oh, we're going to act like this doesn't happen.
So, no, Anthony Michael Hall, like, weirdly, I mean, unfortunately, like, he rapes that woman.
Oh, yeah. Well, but yeah, no, that's true.
Like,
and she's, like, weirdly okay with it?
Yeah, she seems to be, but it's all upsetting and bullshit consent and...
Yeah,
awful. It's all awful.
I mentioned this when we were watching the movie.
Except
so
the dance.
Much of what I hate about John Hughes movies is the like nerd boy wish fulfillment that happens
always.
In all of his movies.
Yeah,
and it's like, I was the tortured genius in high school, so I get the girl, and it's like, but you don't understand that maybe the girl doesn't want you.
Yeah,
well, but if you take one look at like adult John Hughes, you go, oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, so. there's a lot of like proto incel bullshit happening.
Oh, very much.
Can
so,
we
yeah.
can we real quick mention how John Hughes, an adult man, wrote this movie when he saw a headshot of 15-year-old Molly Ringwald, and he was like, "Ooh, I need to write a movie for this girl."
Ugh.
And he put her picture over his desk, and he wrote the movie in 2 days.
It's real gross.
2 days.
Yeah, awesome. It's real fucking gross.
I will say,
yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, apparently Anthony Michael Hall was cast because a lot of dudes came in and were doing nerd, like Long Duk Dong style, like super stereotype, whatever. And Anthony Michael Hall came in and just like played it like a himself, like a human. And he was like, yes, that's what an actual nerd is. This is perfect, which is like sort of endearing. Kind of.
I mean, that's a good... That's good casting. That's a good
choice.
Yeah, I was
going to say, like, that's on the casting director. That's not on fucking general director John Hughes.
No, that's
too.
True. That's true.
Well, yeah, then they made that human into a rapist, so it's like...
That's true.
He didn't. Well, when you put it that way. All right, fine. Yeah.
So, this is... This has been working up in my insides since I watched this fucking movie.
Yeah, do it.
I've never been a big John Hughes fan. Like, okay, so some other examples. Breakfast Club, I can't stand that movie.
Oh, I actually like that one. That one has no actual
rape in it,
which is good.
Upon rewatching it, I hate it a lot, but when I watched it in high school, it was fine to me.
Sure, I totally get that. Ferris Bueller is a movie that I've seen so many times, if I ever see it again, I might shoot myself in the face.
Yeah, that one's kind of rough. That one's kind of rough.
It was always on TV. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Uncle Buck are fine. I think they're okay. And I think it's saved by it being adults in the fucking movie.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. But like, okay, so all of the John Hughes fucking teen movies are full of these messages that I think are totally horrible. Like, oh, just change yourself. Yep. Oh, just rape the girl. Right. Oh, just, you deserve the good thing, so just take whatever somebody throws at you. Like, I don't get how these movies are fucking... shape people. Like, I was reading all these interviews about, like, Judd Apatow is like, I make John Hughes movies but for adults who curse, and it's like, fuck you. John Hughes made shitty movies. Like,
I don't know about that.
I remember in high school, like, people really, really like idolized these sorts of movies. The 16 Candles, and what's the other one that's almost identical in my
Pretty
mind?
Pretty in Pink is actually a lot different, and there are, like, a couple okay things about that movie, but in the end, it's still despicable.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I remember in high school, I had a girlfriend who was, like, idolizing these sorts of movies, and I remember...
You dated Ally Sheedy? Cool.
It would have been cool. Sure.
Yeah.
but I hadn't watched any of these, and I didn't really understand why they were so beloved.
Well, Pretty in Pink is another one of those movies where it's like, oh, the nerd guy, you clearly deserve to be with that girl because you. The big problem I see with these John Hughes movies is the male character, the nerd male character, wants to be with the girl. He says that he loves her. He knows everything about her. But then it ignores whether or not the girl feels the same way.
It doesn't
matter in those. And I know that Ducky doesn't end up with her in the end. Like, spoiler for Pretty in fucking Pink. But, like, that's not his storyline. His storyline is whole movie, it's set up like, oh, you deserve to be with her. Oh, you should go after her. Oh, oh, oh. And then he, like, ends up with a different hot girl because, like, oh, look at you. You deserve it. Like, fuck that bullshit.
So is, like, Anthony Michael Hall the stealth protagonist here? Like, he's...
I think kind of. Yeah, he's definitely the author insert character.
Like, yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lee, you said the word incels earlier, and I think that rings pretty true.
I think
true.
It was Seth.
I see.
Seth,
sorry. Yeah.
But that's 100%.
That's like a newer concept, but that is weirdly appropriate here, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the sort of deservedness and whatnot. Yeah, it's kind of gross.
Yeah, it's some fuckery.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, the thing that sticks out to me, like, we were talking about that this movie actually has a pretty good soundtrack. Like, there's Patti Smith songs in this movie.
Yeah.
There's a scene underscored by Stevie Ray Vaughan music.
Yeah.
What were some of the other... I don't like Stevie Ray
Vaughan. I will note, at the dance, the Specials' Little Bitch, Second Wave Ska, Skank Corner, everybody
the Specials
ready.
Were in there. There's a Squeeze poster on her wall.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Squeeze, like,
yeah.
Welcome there's back a to lot the Skank of
real,
Corner.
Oh, Bowie, Young Americans. This is a really good soundtrack.
Young Americans.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, is this movie so well-remembered because it has an amazing soundtrack? And then I looked it up, and it's like, he didn't pick any of those fucking songs.
No.
Jimmy Iovine, the guy who founded Interscope Records, picked all the songs for this fucking movie.
Yeah, yeah, like, of course. Of course.
Like, what about this movie did John Hughes contribute that isn't shitty? And I am finding zero. Zero things.
Not much, yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That seems fair.
God damn it, I fucking hate this movie.
Yeah, it was pretty goddamn bad. So, Austin, you're already...
You're in fucking rarefied air here. You might have the best positive delta of any guest ever. I'm just making a guess right now. Yeah.
So as we get to that, why don't we get to ratings? Maybe is there anything else anybody else wants to talk about for no reason?
I had one. There was a pretty rough quote early on.
Among
a thousand other ones, but this one seemed particularly rough. Molly Ringwald's talking about her perfect life, and she goes, yeah, or what she wished she would have gotten for her birthday, had anyone remembered. And she goes, yeah, a Trans Am and a black guy. Or, sorry, fuck, I fucked it up. A Trans Am and a guy.
Oh, yeah, I remember this part. Yeah, yeah.
A Trans Am and a guy, pink and black. And her friend, with genuine shock, goes, a black guy? And then she goes, no, a black Trans Am and a pink guy. Not great.
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
That's like 10 minutes in. 10 minutes in.
Shit. So we skipped a bit of, at the party, how drunk Caroline, the girlfriend of Jake
God
Ryan
damn.
Was.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, she's instigating a lot of the craziness of the party. She gets her hair stuck in a door and someone just cuts it off. Like, which I then found out that the actress was actually a natural redhead and she was wearing a blonde wig. So it's far less upsetting than I thought.
I guess. I don't know.
But there's a quote from the party that I thought was just fucking insane. So she's really drunk and she's hanging on Jack Ryan. And she goes to him, I love when your parents are out of town. I fantasize that I'm your wife and we're the most popular adults in town. And I was just thinking, like, that is the most teenage fucking thing that I've ever heard anyone say in my entire life.
Everything is gross.
Yeah.
It's all gross.
That is nasty.
They what use about... a ton of gay slurs in this movie, like just a
they drop some hard F's.
It's really not good.
Hard F's, like several times. It's amazing.
About Anthony Michael Hall or other.
Well, definitely about him, and then about other. Like he drops some too.
Yeah. So apparently, that was just like. Huh? Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like, Sweet 16 party. Where I come from, this is not a thing. Like, it's just not a big deal.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Is it a big
that
deal in the movie or no?
No, I mean, she doesn't end up having one, so. It's set in Illinois, like, outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
At the time, I think it kind of was. There was, like, a few of these when I was growing up, and I feel like, in, like, the mid-80s, that might have been a bigger deal. Yeah. Very possible.
I had some friends that had 16th birthday parties. They weren't like sweet 16s. They were just like bigger than a normal birthday party.
It was for us. It was.
It's a big thing. Like my wife's family, like there, like it's a big deal.
Well, I mean, have you been to Jersey?
I've been. To Jersey.
Yeah, I mean,
we had like the bar and bat mitzvahs, and then like the non-Jewish rich people had like the non-Jew equivalent of those, which was very strange.
All right, so yeah, anyway,
seamless.
even more fun rehearsed. Okay. I don't think anybody's ever gonna know that we stopped.
Oh, we're garbage.
Austin, you had, I think you had another question you had mentioned.
Yeah, so John and Joan, what happened to them?
Oh, very little.
What are they in the movie?
Sure.
Yeah.
They're technically,
I think they were both very young, or at least John was like way younger than I thought.
They looked incredibly young.
They looked like little babies.
And John was playing a sort of atypical John role, being like a dork and also not a lead man, which is confusing.
Yeah, he's kind of a dork in Say Anything, but he is the lead man, even though he's a dork.
Yeah, and he's a dork, but like a suave dork, like an unrealistic dork in Say Anything, I think. Mm. Yeah.
All right, we'll agree to disagree, but let's go. All right,
Anyway, rates, shall we?
And then Joan is just, as we mentioned her, she doesn't have any lines. She's just kind of like a physical comedy in the background.
Yeah. The movie. Yeah. She's great. She's really good.
She has, like, headgear and, like, constantly as at least Lee and I are watching it almost contemporaneously, we were constantly being like, oh, poor Joan.
Yeah.
She deserves so much more.
Yeah.
Yep, that's true.
She is the Alpha and the Omega.
Yeah. Well, she did by herself, you know, eventually. Yeah.
So,
I mean, are you talking about two Oscar nomination Joan Cusack? Because I am.
That one, yeah. And also School of Rock. Great. Maybe her favorite movie of mine. Yeah.
So
Adam Family Values is the best.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, where she played Debbie.
Debbie.
Shitty
Debbie. Yeah, as Lee and I have discussed in the past, we're both Festers.
Fester wants Debbie, so I mean, there you go. Mm-hmm.
So this movie, according to the IMDb Bizzle, has a 7.1. With 86,000 votes.
Whoa!
I'm sorry, that is criminal.
That's going to be a curve breaker for us for sure.
Yeah, almost 87,000. If we're rounding up, it's like people love this movie, but I also people are morons. So,
what a bunch of bastards.
So, with that said, why don't we go with Zach for number one? Zach, what do you think about Austin's obviously superior
regular
version and
Kenny Lofton.
This regular garbage, misogynistic, super rapey, upsetting pile?
Yeah, I feel like you're priming me a little bit, but
I think you agree. I think
tipping his hand a little, but
I really hated this movie. So
and that is
when you're holding four aces, you don't need to bluff. So
all red. Yep.
You gotta know when to hold
all reds.
Get on walk away.
Wycliffe. There's a Wycliffe Jean remix of that song, and it is crazy.
Oh, ooh, weird.
Can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. So as is traditional, I guess I'll go OG first. This movie was... I didn't know what to... I think I also had only seen parts of this movie, and then I, lumping it in with The Breakfast Club, thought it was going to be fun, and it was the opposite of that. I would say, like, I usually am pretty generous, but I think this is, like, a 3. Like, it was really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It had... I only give it any points because, again, I think, like, recency bias, and like people did seem to love these kind of movies when we were in high school and probably the generation before us and whatnot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it has a cultural historic significance, but yeah, did not do much for me at all.
Yep.
Austin's, I think, very good. I like anytime anybody goes vamps. That's always fun. It's always really good.
Oh, you must love the movie Vamps then.
I mean, it's kind of a different thing, I think, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's about vampires. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah, sure.
What about Vampire Academy? Have you seen that one?
Isn't that a TV show? I thought that was a TV show.
No.
Or that John C. Reilly movie called like Cirque
de
Freak.
Oh, Cirque de Freak, the Vampire's Assistant.
Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah,
I prefer
you
what
catch
we,
up with your vampire fictions.
I'm more of a What We Do in the Shadows kind of guy, but
good choice. Mm. Good choice.
And True Blood. Don't hide your true feelings.
Oh yeah, do love me some True Blood.
So are you Team Bill or Team Eric? I'm totally Team Eric.
God.
Oh, I think Bill.
Fuck.
Definitely Bill.
Fuck you. You like Bill? You piece of shit.
Suck it. Suck it.
Oh my God. Superstars. This is way
right,
worse than usual for me for some
Austin,
reason.
Austin's getting a solid 7.5. 7.5.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alright. Lee, you're next on the spreadsheet, so you wanna go?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll follow the same order that you do. So for the real movie. Wow.
correct.
Yeah.
So
good answer.
Yeah, and this is one where I think I was convinced that I had seen it, but I think maybe I was just combining scenes from every other John Hughes movie I'd have ever seen.
Exactly how I feel now.
Yeah, I mentioned Pretty in Pink before, and that movie has a little bit of enjoyability in it, I think, for me. This one, however, it's going to get a 2.
And that's
0.25 for John Cusack and 1.75 for Joan. She is my everything.
That math doesn't quite add up, but that's fine. Yeah.
1.75 and 0.25, that does equal 2.
Oh,
but
I thought you said 2.5. Never mind. My bad. Mm-hmm. My bad.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah. Fuck John Hughes. I'm not happy he's dead because he's a human being, but like I'm glad he doesn't make movies anymore.
Okay.
Austin, your movie. Let's talk about its positives. Its positives are a dope ass soundtrack.
Oh yeah.
Positives are
so good.
A central vampire theme. Its positives are Joan Cusack in a co-starring role front and center.
Yeah.
And I think a movie like that, I would be remiss to give it anything less than an 8.3.
Solid.
Ooh, quite high. Quite high.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you add 1.7, that makes it.
Sure does. But we're not doing that tonight. I love my Joni.
Yeah.
And I won't apologize.
Seth, what do you got? Deep sigh. Deep patented Seth sigh.
Okay.
Here we go. Here
now,
we go.
This first movie, it's rapey, it's offensive, but it does have good dad scenes, and the dad scenes are totally worth it.
It does have good dad scenes.
Like, there's more than one?
Yeah.
I mean, there's one full one and then one
1.3.
Like the dad scenes are really important, and also Jack Ryan's weird pants. Jack Ryan's.
Well, they were pleated and cargo. You're right.
They were pleated and cargo and maybe cut off.
Oh, they had weird like straps around the bottom that made it look like you could pull part of them off.
Yeah. And
he does also drive a 944, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Honestly, pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I think that the dad scenes, for example, are like really good and interesting, but the most of this movie is total garbage.
Yep.
And so I'm gonna give this movie a 1. for just the dad redeeming scenes and like pure quantity of screen time.
Okay.
He's also I will feel remiss if I don't mention he also played the dad in Breaking Away, one of my favorite movies of all time. But wow. You know,
yeah.
Wait, the bicycle movie? That. Is that the bike movie?
Well, fuck you, Zach. Indiana you have to edit that shit out. Yeah. It is an Indiana movie, you're right.
Oh shit.
I thought you were talking about Get Over It. So
yeah,
really
we've covered this in that episode and subsequent episodes.
Any of that.
Yeah.
So I'll give this original movie, if only for the dad scenes that are just a minuscule portion of the film, a one.
I think we have a new Delta champ for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the yeah. Deltas. Yeah. The Deltas on this one. As per this like vampy like weird high school drama. My one critique is that the reflections of people like in glass, well, like my theory is the reason why you cannot see the reflections of vampires in
mirrors
is because of the silvering, because silver is a holy metal.
It depends on what vampire mythology you're looking into, but that is a very common. It's the same thing with photography. Silver-based photography
y'all know that, like, I was...
You know, y'all know I'm into vampire science.
Yeah.
So.
Vampire science and fucking chemistry and geology. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I was a jeweler for several years, and, like, the antibacterial properties of silver, or rather, the fact that bacteria does not grow well on silver and that sort of thing, like, it kind of led me into this weird mythos where, you know, you can't see vampires in silver because they're unholy objects, or the fact that you use silver nitrate to produce photographs and that doesn't really gel with your modern digital photography and things.
Hey Seth, any number, just any.
So my critique is about your science about silver.
Before you finish up with your gripes, I just want to say, look at that photograph. hashtag Nickelback.
Yuck!
No,
yuck.
See, you just made it worse. Like, now I'm gonna rate even lower because you had to remind me of that bullshit.
Yeah, think about Avril Lavigne
because I hate all of that. So
Seth, why do you have to go make things so complicated?
Oh boy. You know what? You get a zero because of,
oh, shit!
Because of Lee's
what?
Bullshit.
Zero. That's
no.
Bullshit.
No.
Robbed.
No. Next time Lee comes up with something, I'll punish him with a very, very low score.
Yeah.
Just because he was being an obstinate little shit. So Austin, you'll get like a 6.7.
Jeez.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay. That's some good stuff.
But Lee, next time, you're totally fucked. Piece of shit.
Sounds right.
Uh-huh.
Sounds right.
I'm sure. All
right. So next week, we got Seth episode with Milk Money, which is going to be very good.
Oh, you pronounce that in a weird way, but yeah. Uh-huh.
I say milk that way as well.
Oh, well, that's because you two are both from the same region in the country, and you pronounce I's as E's
for
no good.
The region of sadness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does that make Indiana?
I'll add another clue to our long forgotten where is Lee from category. The house I grew up in fell into a mine shaft. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my soon to be former roommate found out exactly where you live, which was weird.
Was Damn Daniel the one who posted on our website?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He sure did.
Yeah,
yeah. He was pretty
close.
Son
of a bitch.
He gets it. So.
Well, anyway, until next time, I mean, I guess.
Should we just end
fuck
on
John Hughes, right? Like,
yeah. I was going to say gong sound.
Oh, yeah. After I say until next time, we edit in a gong sound. That's good. That's a good ending.
Yeah. All right. We'll do that. Cool.
And I know you, Zach, you're going to leave this whole thing in and
always
then edit
do.
In a gong sound.
Always do.
It's a little shitty.